So good morning to all those of you who are not latecomers. We are reading in book 11, the book of everlasting day. And there, Savitri has encountered a form of the Supreme Lord. And what we read last week was that he told her, it is not possible for you to take Satyavan back to earth with you. So you have two choices. You can experience the joy of separation. He mentions happy oneness, rapturously enhanced by attraction in the throbbing air between. You will be able to be in touch with Satyavan, but you can't take him back to earth with you. But if you wish, you have richly deserved, you can yourself stay here in heaven, and the two of you can be together here on these higher levels beyond the earth. So he invites her. He says, O immortal, to felicity arise. So that is on page 685, line 516. There's a little indent, a new paragraph is beginning on Savitri listening in her tranquil heart. We'll go on from there today. Margaret, will you begin?
On Savitri listening in her tranquil heart to the harmony of the ensnaring voice, a joy exceeding earth and heavens, the bliss of an unknown eternity, a rapture from some waiting infinite. A smile came, rippling out in her white eyes, its confident felicity's messenger, as if the first beam of the morning sun rippled along two vacant lotus pools. O besetter of man's soul with life and death, and the world's pleasure and pain and day and night, tempting his heart with the far lure of heaven, testing his strength with the close touch of hell, I climb not to thy everlasting day, even as I have shunned thy eternal night, to me who turn not from thy terrestrial way. Give back the other self, my neighbors. Thy spaces need him not to help their joy. Earth needs this beautiful spirit made by thee to fling delight down like a net of gold.
A little more, yes.
Earth is a chosen place of mightiest souls. Earth is a heroic spirit's battlefield, the forge where the archmason shapes his works. Thy servitudes on earth are greater, King, than all the glorious liberties of heaven.
Thank you. So Savitri hears in her heart that wonderful voice. It's an ensnaring voice. I'm sure if we heard it, we would be ensnared immediately. A joy exceeding earth's and heaven's poured down, a bliss of an unknown eternity. That voice is full of promise, of rapture from some waiting infinite. How will she reply? She smiles. A beautiful smile rippling out in her wide eyes. That smile expresses her confident felicity. She is quite sure of that inner bliss. And that smile looks like the first rays of the sun rippling and waking up two lotus pools. Beautiful eyes. And then she replies to him. She says, O besetter of man's soul, you are always, in a way, attacking or assailing human beings, the soul of man. You you challenge the soul with life and death. You challenge the soul with the world's pleasure and pain. You challenge the soul with the dualities of day and night, light and darkness. You tempt the human heart with the far lure of heaven. You attract him to this other world, and you test man's strength with the close touch of hell, terrible experiences which human beings have to endure. She says, I am not going to rise up, to climb up to your everlasting day. Just as I didn't accept your eternal night, I didn't accept your dual twilights, I am not going to leave the earth. I turn not from the terrestrial way. I'm still asking you to give me back the other self my nature asks. Give me back Satyavan, my only Lord. Your wonderful heavens don't need him to help their joy. They are already perfect. Earth needs his beautiful spirit made by thee to spread delight, to fling delight down like a net of gold. And then come these wonderful lines, which I often like to remember, about the earth, the importance and value of the earth. Earth is the chosen place of mightiest souls. The greatest, strongest souls choose to come to earth. Don once sent me an account of an amazing after-death experience somebody had had. And this was the message that he conveyed. He said that every single soul, human soul on earth, is a hero. Earth is the chosen place of mightiest souls. Earth is the heroic spirit's battlefield, the forge where the archmason shapes his works. The archmason is the architect of the world, no? But he has to forge his weapons and his tools here on the earth. Thy servitudes on earth are greater, King, than all the glorious liberties of heaven. Here on earth we are like slaves, like servants, subject to all kinds of difficult conditions and challenges. But she says these are worth more than all the glorious liberties of heaven. Yes, Patricia.
Would you tell the story or comment about Sri Aurobindo's letter to the mother when she was in Japan? That letter saying, we have conquered heaven and earth.
He was speaking about him and her.
Yes.
And he was saying that we can always attain the heavens that we have come from. But the work is to be done here. I don't anymore remember the exact words, but this is where the victory has to be won. This is where the work has to be done. And this is his affirmation, no? It is a reaffirmation of the message that he's giving in all his writings. His whole spirituality is based on the message that there is a work to be done here on earth, and human beings are the instruments and tools by which this work will be done. So, of course, the soul longs in the difficulties that it faces here. It longs for that higher bliss and peace. But what has to be done is to bring that bliss and peace down here. The earth has to be transformed, the divine life has to be manifested here on earth. And he says it's inevitable, it's going to happen, but you can participate. That's the possibility. You can help to hasten the rule of the divine's love upon earth. And that is why Savitri is demanding the return of Satyavan to earth. That's what he represents, the realization of this possibility.
Yeah. This line 538, chosen place is chosen by the soul or by
chosen
the
by the souls, chosen by the mightiest souls choose to come to earth. We've all chosen, otherwise we wouldn't be here. Nobody forced us. Nobody could force us. We have all accepted to be here. Audrey.
My mind goes to when I accept this.
Hmm.
And then I think, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And this is very, very serious. And then the mother says, be happy. And I see this in myself and in others. Very serious. You've got to get to do this, right?
Remain simple.
And
be happy.
Yeah.
Do your work as well as you can.
It's so, my conditioning is if you've got to do something.
Yes. That's right.
It's so tough. I think now these are among the most powerful lines in Savitri, because I once asked myself, how did Savitri actually get him back from death?
Yeah, so let's wait and see.
There was
I think in synthesis, he says about those who have chosen the infinite, they have already been chosen
by the infinite. But in the Life Divine, I looked out for it and it comes. He very clearly says that it would be unacceptable if the souls were not given the free choice whether to participate in the manifestation or not. We've all been asked and we all said yes, otherwise we wouldn't be here. And we're also allowed to change our minds. There are spiritual paths which say, oh no, I have to get out of this. And he says, yes, if you're determined enough, you can. But then you might change your mind again.
You have to work for it.
Whichever way, even if you want to leave, you have to work for it. But even if you'd achieved nirvana or I've forgotten the names of the lokas, Ananda Loka and so on. Even so, then if you saw actually what's going on, we are dissatisfied and we feel it's too much because we're not able to see what's going on. But if we could see from there, see clearly, then we say, oh, made a big mistake, got to go back.
Somehow I think the soul never chooses to leave here. It's not the soul that wants to go into nirvana, it's the mind. Is the other, they want to go up there and escape because the mind and vital are suffering too much. But it says earth is the chosen place of the mightiest souls.
Hmm.
And the soul, because this is the soul of the universe, this earth. So if you really want to manifest, you got to get down here. That's what I told my mom when she wanted to go to heaven. I said, Mother, you can make all progress only on earth. She didn't understand. So
poor mother, you should let her have some rest before she comes back again. Goodness.
She thought she was going to stay there.
I remember from way back that there's a section in here, in Savitri, there where the souls are all collected.
Yes.
And waiting to go back, and how will they go back, and so on.
Choosing.
They're choosing their next.
That's when they've already agreed to participate in the manifestation. When they leave the body, then the body dissolves, the life part flows into the universal life, the mind flows into universal mind, and the souls sleep. And in their sleep, they assimilate all the experiences they've had in the last life, and then they choose what will be the map of the next life. And this goes, this continues, this goes on and on and on until their work in human time is done, till they've finished what they came to do.
Another question is sometimes to be very evil.
That's another whole topic which we won't go into today.
Another question which comes to the mind is, like, the souls were made before the manifestation or after? When do we choose?
The souls are eternal, infinite portions of Brahman. They are beyond, they are transcendent. They're in their origin, their essence. They come as essential sparks into the manifestation. And then in the course of the earth evolution, they build up around themselves through their experiences a personality, a developing soul personality, which continues from birth to birth and grows and eventually becomes developed enough to take charge of the individual human incarnation. So Savitri is in this state, no? That's why she's not listening to any of these lures which we would probably eagerly respond to if we are offered all the things that the Lord offers to her.
Where's that thing about till their work in earthly time is done?
That is in Book 2, Canto 14. I think it's the second section. So let's go on. She's going to describe her experience of the heavens. Jocelyn.
The heavens were once to me my natural form. I too have wandered in star-humored worlds, faced sun gold pastures and moon silver swords, and heard the harping laughter of their strings, and lingered on the branches dropping myrrh. I too have reveled in the fields of life, touched by the ethereal raiment of the winds. Thy wonder round of music after us, lived in the rhyme of a bright unlaboring thoughts, have beat swift harmonies of rapture vast, dance in spontaneous measures of the soul, the great and easy dances of the
gods. Thank you. Anything to ask or share so we can go on, Helmut? Yes, it was one of the gifts that were given to Jesus, baby Jesus. Yeah.
Frankincense.
Yeah, but myrrh, exactly what it is, but here she mentions that it comes from a tree, perhaps it's a resin.
It comes,
Mother's given a symbol of that, but I forgot what it is.
What, sorry?
Mother gave the symbol of those three things, gold.
Yes, you can look it up and tell us next time. So, Helmut, you'll read on.
Oh, fragrant are the names thy children bore, and lovely is the memory of their feet amid the wonder flowers of paradise. Heavier tread is mine, a mightier. There where the gods and demons battle in night, or wrestle on the borders of the sun, taught by the sweetness and the pain of life, to bear the uneven, strenuous beat that it forks against the edge of some diviner's hope, to dare the impossible with his pangs of search. In me, the spirit of immortal love stretches its arms out to embrace mankind. Too far thy heavens for me from suffering me. Imperfect is the joy, not shared by all. Oh, to spread forth or to encircle and seize more hearts he loved in us has filled thy world. O life, the life beneath the weeping stars, for victory in the tournament of with death, for bending of the fierce and difficult bow, the splendid sword of God.
Thank you.
Having this line, imperfect is the joy not shared by all. It needs some explanation.
It needs some explanation. A joy that isn't shared by everybody can't be perfect. No? So I think she's saying it in the context of heaven. We think of those souls in heaven enjoying the bliss of the Supreme, having all these wonderful experiences, wandering in star-jeweled groves and dancing the easy dances of the gods. She says, I'm not interested in that kind of joy. In me, the spirit of immortal love stretches its arms out to embrace mankind. It's also the aim of the Buddhists or of Buddha, no? That he said he can't accept the liberation, the total liberation, until all sentient creatures participate in it. Not just human beings, but every plant, every insect, all sentient creatures.
That's supposed to be the job of the Buddhist, the Bodhisattva.
No, it's the role of every Buddhist, of course.
Every Buddhist, it's supposed to be specialized.
Are you satisfied with this answer,
yes.
Prasad? Yes. Yeah.
Shravan, possibly I'm wrong, but for me this was very simple. I'm very sorry for that. Why? Because for me it's her mission. For since everybody in this world doesn't come to a new world, she has to do her work in sanity. For me, it's her mission. She needs.
But she's saying it.
Yeah.
As a general statement.
I know.
And many spiritual beings have pointed this out. There's even some spiritual philosophies that say that part of the joy of heaven is looking down and seeing the sufferings of people on earth and even in hell. No? For me, that is inconceivable. No? So the great spiritual souls have felt a personal and individual joy, a joy that's not shared by all, is necessarily imperfect. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, my sense is this is the highest expression of compassion.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
And it's the key,
you see. Yes. This sentence is interesting because of the structure. Now she says, there, on the earth where the gods and demons are battling in night or wrestling on the borders of the sun. Taught. Who is taught? I think it is the spirit of immortal love. In me, the spirit of immortal love is taught by the sweetness and the pain of life to bear the uneven, strenuous beat that throbs against the edge of some divinest hope. It's not the great and easy dances of the gods. It's something much more intense and adventurous and difficult, challenging. Mm.
Today, if you watch the daily news, and if you feel that the earth, the world is your family, how can you not feel, for example, civilians in Aleppo being attacked. You know, if you feel these people are your family, Prasad, you're a father, no?
Yeah.
How would you feel if your children were suffering? You want to relieve them, no? It is so inhuman, and yet so many people are seeing these, at the UN they're seeing these, or in US Congress they're seeing these tragic photos, and they're just watching and doing nothing. How can they stand for this? So we don't need to discuss much about what's going on in heaven. It's right here, and what are we going to do about it? But that's why I love these lines. The spirit of immortal love stretches its arms out to embrace mankind.
Mm. Yes.
The work from this place, to me, Ashram Oroville, has got to spread more practically in the world. It can't just be for devotees who read the journals.
Mm.
You know? It has to hit the mainstream.
Yeah. Patty, I think we need to go from near to far.
Yes.
For us, we need to look around our village and see and feel the pain. That's what I can do. That's what I do.
Right here in Oroville, we have still such a lot of injustice to tackle.
Inside
Oroville. Inside
Oroville. You don't need to go outside the farm.
You go out, you diffuse your power. You don't have enough power to diffuse so much outside.
All of us, we can say, are a microcosm of the whole. So whatever progress, whatever we can do individually, that contributes to the progress and the betterment
of
the whole. So we all have to do that, whatever we can.
Well, I have to say that today I learned an Indian American woman from South Carolina is going to become the Secretary of State in America. So I think that'll bring Indian values finally. Something will change.
Something is changing. That's
true. It's imperfect with the joy not shared by all. As you said, it can be translated. Can it be translated into, if we share all the joy that we experience here, we are living in experiencing heaven on earth. That's also another.
But it can't just be for us, because otherwise that's selfish. And there's so many people suffering.
It doesn't mean that we have to be filled up with gloom and doom all the time either.
No, but
if we can feel the joy of the divine contact and we can spread that, that's worth doing. It's not the whole solution. Yes, Tuan.
I read out something. This arrived by mail this morning to me. It's one of the aphorisms. I don't know the number because it's difficult. Be not repelled by the world's crookednesses. The world is a wounded and venomous snake, wriggling towards a distinct of sloughing and perfection. Wait, for it's a divine wager, and out of this baseness, God will emerge brilliant and triumphant.
What's the last part again? Would you repeat that? What will emerge?
God.
God.
Triumphant.
God.
And brilliant.
So the world is a wounded and venomous snake, and it's trying to shed its skin, sloughing, he uses the word, no? Yeah. So we have to wait until it's sloughed off that skin, and then we'll see the divine force and energy.
What will this earth become? I don't think we, at our stage of evolution yet, know, but we're working for it as this poem comes, and whenever it will reach, or what will it reach, you know, is yet to come, and we must joyously work for it and wait for it.
Yes. Happy, harmonious, clean, green, everybody happy.
All the things that we can possibly dream
nobody
of.
Nobody fighting, nobody pouring chemicals in the earth. It's pretty simple.
All the things that we can dream of.
And
in the first chapter of The Life Divine, Sri Aurobindo shows us in 7 short paragraphs that the fact that we can dream of these things is the indication that they are going to be realized. Yeah. Otherwise, why are we carrying these dreams in us? Where have they come from? They're coded into us. They've been in humanity from as far back as we can trace, and they will not go away. They don't go away in the face of all the contradictions, because they have to be realized. And he says, we human beings, we've reached the stage where we can choose to collaborate with that process, and we've got all the thousands of years of research, psychological research, that have evolved the different methods of yoga. Yoga means union with the divine. No? All those methods are there to help us. And now he's given us a new perspective on the traditional methods of yoga, that all of them are valid as aids to this conscious participation in this aim of the divine life upon earth, not in heaven, not among the easy dances of the gods, here in the material universe. Not only the earth, I think, the universe.
Universes.
And, well, we hope that the other universes are in a happier condition.
Other universes, maybe in other direction, opposite direction to the...
People like to think about all that, but what about this?
So, yes.
What she was referring to, the letter she wrote to Mother, it's just two lines.
Oh, you have it? You have it? Yes,
yes.
Very
heaven
good.
We have possessed, but not the earth. But the fullness of the yoga is to make, in the formula of the Veda, heaven and earth equal in one.
Exactly.
Yes. And that is what he said is not possible. No? Just now, what we read last week, he was saying they're forever separate.
Yeah.
They can't be one. But what Savitri is constantly insisting on is that they have to be one. And that's why she and Satyavan have to be together. And at the end, of course, her wish is granted.
But if I can just say two more things. One is that Mother gives the way of attacking death. First she tells him who he is, and then what she's going to do about him. And then she says, give me back my other self, my nature asks. So I think even for politicians, the Mother has given the most practical words, six words. Are you ready? Will you help?
Huh? But they think they are helping.
Yeah,
they think they are doing the thing that
but
has to be done.
They need guidance from this place. To me, that garden of bliss with those seven rishi fountains, that's what it's for. Those rishis from India are going to send this knowledge to them. Because otherwise they're floundering. It's so simple, no? Just make everybody healthy and happy.
Yes.
At this point, the being who is talking to Savitri, it is the... it's God, it's the being of love and everything. And
it's that
terrestrial perfection. Then why is he trying to dissuade?
This is a very intelligent question. Thank you. Why is it like this? Why is the story like this? No? Before it was easy, when it was death, then we could understand. No? But now she sees that this one whom she faced as death and night. He's still telling her, no, sorry, it's not possible. So I think we will have to follow the course of how it becomes possible, finally, to understand. But my view on it is that we, in book 7, we follow Savitri's yoga, how it starts as an ordinary suffering woman who knows that her husband's going to die, and then what she has to do to find her true inner being. And when she's found her soul, her psychic being, and united with her central being, the origin, then she has to go further. There are two further steps, no? There's the nirvana and the all-negating absolute, and then there's the cosmic spirit and the cosmic consciousness. At the end of book 7, she has reached a kind of divinized state. She feels oneness with the entire universe and all the beings in it. So that is a realization, and there's been a certain transformation of her human nature that goes with it. But then this has to be tested. In reality, how far can this be realized? This is just one individual who's attained this consciousness. How far can it be worked out? So the way it is worked out is that each of these realizations that she's had in the course of her yoga gets tested. So he's still testing her. He's still challenging her. Yeah. No? Yeah. That are you, what are you after, really? Mm-hmm. No? So that's what we will see, I think.
I think he has to do this because all along you said he's the Lord, but he's wearing this dark covering, he's being the big meanie, because she has to get the aspiration. In the beginning, no, she said it's hopeless, there's nothing I can do, right?
Yes, that's what
I just
what
cash in my chips, it's over. So then the voice speaks, and then the vision comes. And
you will remember, Tuan, there's an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo's about aspiring to heaven, and I will go on aspiring even when the Lord pushes me down into hell. You remember that? I have to go on wrestling with with the Lord when he tries to oppose me. And this is because of this testing, strengthening, no? He tests our strength with pleasure and pain, and with the lure of heaven, and with the close touch of hell. And this is how the soul develops its full divine potentiality. Jai.
There's another aspect, it is the freedom.
The freedom.
This choice has to be made.
Yes.
So what is putting the choice?
Of course she's choosing, she's holding on to her choice very firmly. But how far will she carry it? No? So that's what we will see. Yes, Prasad.
Isn't it common that among relationships we often challenge our relationship?
Yes.
So it's justifiable.
Yes.
I didn't hear that.
I think we should move on. So she expresses her aspiration. She says, what I want is to spread forth, to encircle and seize more hearts till love in us, in me and Satyavan, has filled thy world. And I'm aspiring for life. I want life, the life beneath the wheeling stars, the life on earth. I want victory in this battle with death. And I want the delight of the battle, the bending of the fierce and difficult bow, for flashing of the splendid sword of God. There's something in us which wants challenges. It doesn't want everything to be smooth and easy. And she says, that's what I'm longing for. So it continues from there. Please, Audrey. Yes?
O thou who sounds the trumpet and blasts, part not the handle from the untried steel. Take not the warrior with his blows struck. Are there not still unhuman fights to wage? O kinsman, clang on still. Weld us to one in thy strong smithy of life. Thy fine curved jewel hilt called savagery, thy blaze exultant smile named Satyavan. Fashion to beauty, point us through the world. Break not the lyre before the song is found. Are there not still unnumbered chants to weave? O subtle soul, musician of the years, play out what thou hast fluted on my stalks. Arise from the string their first wild link divine, and that discovered which is yet unsung. I know that I can lift man's soul to God. I know that he can bring the immortal down.
Thank you. O thou who sounds the trumpet in the lists. This word lists comes in four places in Savitri, and it's the area that's marked out for a fight between champions. In films about medieval times, you see these warriors on horseback with their lances, you know, and they're fighting in the lists. But it doesn't have to be like that. It used to be that in more sensible days, if there were two armies of more or less equal strength, they didn't want to have a great massacre. Each of them would choose their champion, their best fighter, and then they would mark out a list, and in the sight of the two armies, the two champions would fight, and whoever won, he'd won. No, that was it. So this is a list, it's marked out for a fight between champions. And she says, you are the one who sound the trumpet, you're the one who gives the signal for the fight to start. So why are you separating? Don't separate the handle from this steel, from this, which hasn't been tried yet. It hasn't been tested. Don't take away the warrior before he's had his chance to strike his blow, no? Aren't there still a million fights to wage? And she addresses him as the king smith. You're the master smith who makes the swords. So, still you've only just started. You have to go on with your work. You have to weld us to one. Make Savitri and Satyavani, they have to be firmly joined together, no? And you can call the hilt, the handle part, this beautiful decorated hilt, that's Savitri. And the blade, the one that will go out and do the work, this is Satyavan. So please make us a really beautiful sword and point us through the world to do your work. And then he changes the image. He says, don't break the lyre before the song is found. The lyre is a small harp which the old poets used to carry with them. And when they were inspired, they would chant their poems to the sound of the lyre. So he says, the song hasn't been found yet. No, don't break the lyre. Aren't there still unnumbered chants to weave? Needs the lyre and the singer. And then again, there's a subtle change in the image. It says, oh, subtle-souled musician of the years, play out what thou hast fluted on my stops. When he uses the word stops, we have to think about not a lyre and not a flute, but an organ. The Lord, the Supreme Lord has a magnificent organ. The whole universe is his organ. No? But on my stops, on me, Savitri, you've played your first little theme. Often we hear this in classical music, now that before all the organ notes come into play, the theme will be played just with one hand, very, very simply. Perhaps we might choose the flute stop for that. No? So she says, go on, continue, arise from the strain, their first wild plaint divined. Divine sensed, somehow some inspiration has come into these first notes, no? But go on, discover what hasn't been sung yet. And then she gives her declaration of what she thinks can be sung, no? What she knows. I know that I can lift man's soul to God. And I know that he, Satyavan, can bring the immortal down.
What is plaint?
Plaint. Well, we have it in the word complaint, but the word plaintive. It is a a kind of melancholy strain in music. So those first few hesitating, fluting notes, which are the beginning of the theme, they need to be developed.
Smile.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as I remember, Satyavan was living in the forest.
Yes.
What does it mean? What is the mission that we must see here?
What, if we remember the author's note at the beginning of the poem, what Satyavan represents is the soul, the individual soul, and the soul of humanity, which has to be rescued from the grip of ignorance and death. And it has to be rescued so that the mission of humanity is fulfilled. And in several places in the poem, Shobindo hints what is that mission of humanity. The place I'm thinking of now, I think it's in Book 1, Canto 4, he says that all the great divine powers are waiting to descend on earth when they hear the voice, the appeal of the incarnate. So perhaps this is the role of Satyavan. He has to invoke, he has to be embodied, and the embodied soul has to invoke the descent of all those higher powers.
Is it him or her?
It's him.
Him.
I know that he can bring the immortal down. Yeah.
Could say something about 580 when she speaks about Savitri. Did you say so? Because I was sure to say she's talking about herself. What does she mean? Because it's very powerful, this line.
Yeah, well, she's talking about Savitri and Satyavan.
Yeah.
So Savitri, she would be the handle.
Yeah.
She will be what the Lord holds onto when he's doing his fighting, no? And she's very beautiful and jeweled and curved, no? That's what he will hold onto. And welded on, united with her, is Satyavan. So through Savitri, the Lord will use his instrument, Satyavan. Of course, later on in Book 11, the Lord himself describes their dual mission. We will see that in a couple of weeks' time. Mm.
But that's like the opposite of Mother and Shrivindu, isn't it? Because she was the active one. And he was it's interesting, no?
Yeah.
So wait till we come to the spot, later on.
I want to say this lines 571 to 573, to me are like what's going on in Iraq today.
Mm.
Because at ISIL, they're a cult of death.
Yes.
So it's this victory in the tournament with death. For bending of the fierce and difficult bow, for flashing of the splendid sword of God.
Yes.
So that victory is being fought and is going to be won. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Syria is still a... But I think what that strengthening, what you said earlier about strengthening, that's why Aleppo is being crushed, to make them stronger.
Poor people, poor people. Let us not go
us
into
not
that
discuss,
now.
Let us not look at the problems of the world.
Anandi, would you read?
Yes.
Line 591.
590. I know that he can bring the immortal down. Our will labors per bit by will, and without thee, an empty roar of storm, a senseless whirlwind in the Titan's force. And without thee, is ne'er the strength of God. Let northern conscious gulfs swallow man's face, but through earth ignorance struggles toward thy light. O thunder, with the lightnings of a soul, give not to darkness and to death, my son, thy son. Achieve thy wisdom's hidden firm decree and the mandate of thy secret worldwide love.
Yes. She's giving the responsibility back to him. She's asserting her will, apparently against his. You know? But she says, our will, the will of Satyavan and myself and all human beings, our will labors, it struggles and strives, permitted by thy will. And without thee, whatever we do, however strong we are, even the Titan's force is a senseless whirlwind, an empty roar of storm. It's without significance or value. Even if we have the strength of gods, if your will is not with us, then it's a snare. We trap ourselves, no? So she begs him. She says, oh, you who have all the power of the thunderer with the lightnings of the soul, don't give up to darkness and to death thy sun, the sun that you have lit here amongst us. Achieve, complete thy wisdom's hidden firm decree. You have decided this, no? You have given us the mandate of thy secret worldwide love. You have to allow it to be fulfilled.
She's telling him what to do. She's not his puppet.
Slava, would you read? This is similar to the passage which follows King Asvapati's great plea to the Supreme Divine Mother. There's a silence. Her words failed. They fall silent. And they are lost in these immensities of thought which seize them at the limits of their cry, you know, as if they get swallowed up in the vastnesses. And their meaning gets hidden in those great distances that move, that stir only to more than ever has been won by speech, by the power of words, from the unthinkable end of all our thought and the ineffable, the one who can never be formulated in words, the ineffable from whom all words come. So we don't know what will be the response to her appeal.
Previously also I recognized it like that. Here too, first Savitri recognizes the higher power in that whom he is discussing. Then he is starting responding to that.
She sees, let's go back to where it happens. It's at the beginning of the second section, page 678, after the break. She's found herself in this marvelous world of everlasting day, and she's seen the different levels and the beings and the landscapes. And finally she has risen up with this lovely description, like a lark rising in the morning. She's risen up to the highest level. And then, as one drowned in a sea of splendor and bliss, mute in the maze of these surprising worlds, turning, she saw their living knot and source. So he's like the heart and the embodiment and the source of all these glorious heavens. He's the key to their charm, and he's the fount, the source of their delight. And she recognizes him. She knew him for the same who snares our lives, captured in his terrifying, pitiless net, and makes the universe his prison camp, and makes in his immense and vacant vasts the labor of the stars a circuit vein, and death the end of every human road, and grief and pain the wages of man's toil. One whom her soul had faced as death and night. That's the mask he has put on to face her and to test her. No? Now a sum of all sweetness gathered into his limbs and blinded her heart to the beauty of the sun. So all the challenges that we face in life, it's the Lord. Everything that upsets us, it's the Lord.
Testing.
Everything that we feel that we have to oppose and fight against.
So that's why back in that canto, The Way of Fate and Problem of Pain, Nara tells the queen not to oppose
Savitri, yes.
A him, or whatever. You have to wait, though, isn't it? It takes a while. But it's because she rose to a certain height of consciousness that she could perceive him as that, right? She was free
That's
of all
it.
The attachments.
She's passed through these tests, and because she's passed through them, she's come into the everlasting day, and then she can see that, oh yes, who was facing me? Who was testing me? It's him. And she's quite sure. She's got this confident felicity, no? She's quite sure it's all going to turn out all right, but she has to go on with the game.
Because only ignorance is the cause of suffering.
This is Sri Aurobindo's autobiography. He has marched on this path, and each one of us.
Well, he says he's made it easier for us. I think we'll stop there for today and listen to Mother reading some of these lines. Okay, we want to stop here,
yeah,
no?
Yes.
So 1, 2, 3, 4. I think we'd better do this.
They are hidden for a mass
a super conscious glow in light, creator of seeds in his all-knowing seed. His lover is an almightiness in seed. Awake, he is the eternal and above, was the holy grace of the infinite, its omniscience and omnipotence, its immobile silence, absolute and love. He sees the whiteness of a boundless sky. He sees the pattern of a starless earth. He sees the burning of worldwide sun. To look upon each other, soul, soul, then, light and anthem from the heart to again. A voice soared up, whose magic sound, good girl, the bones of the moving of the earth, the song of Russia, and her cry to spirit song. The smile kills crying out in her wide eyes.
Thanks to Sherpendorf.